How's it going and welcome to episode 64 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. Of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I'm once again thankful to be joined by my co-host Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter at HastingKevin. And it's great to have you back, Kevin. As I announced in the last couple of weeks, and everybody listening should know by now, Kevin is back in Hawaii, back on the Big Island, and a vastly different recording time for you than you were used to, and definitely from me being an East Coaster. So how are you liking the new time?
Oh, I absolutely love it. And not so much the recording time, the game times. I love getting up in the morning and there being games on right away. Although tomorrow morning, or this morning as people are listening, Sunday morning, will be my first 6 a.m. game that is scheduled in the week that I've been here. And I absolutely love it. Sun comes up and dogs wake me up about 5, so I'll be ready.
There you go. All right. I was going to say, good thing it's summertime. That's all I'm saying. It's summertime. You get up. The dogs can help you get up, sure. But if it was winter, even in Hawaii, I venture to guess a 6 a.m. Start time, not going to be as easy to get to. Maybe that's just me. All right. Luckily for us, we also have a special guest to help break down our fab options for this week, in addition to having Kevin back with us. And that guest is none other than Ryan Bloomfield. Ryan is a writer and social media director at Baseball HQ, as well as an associate editor of the annual Baseball Forecaster. He might be better known as the 2020 FSWA Baseball Writer of the Year, or perhaps as the regular producer of the Bloom Boards, which everybody is always very happy to see them come back each year as Ryan ramps those up as the season starts. Ryan can also be heard regularly recording with friend of the show, Casey Bubba, on the Bubba and the Bloom podcast, part of the Benched with Bubba podcast. I guess network, it's just one feed. I'll just call it a network. That's fine. You can find his Bloom Boards and links just about all of his other work by following him on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. It's great to be on with you. Appreciate the invite. And I'm not just saying this, but I'm a regular listener to the show. So you guys were talking about 6 a.m. wake-ups. I've got a 6 a.m. wake-up of my own Sunday morning, and that's in the form of either my one-year-old or three-year-old. Every Sunday morning, I put the headphones on, put them both in the double stroller, and put on your podcast. I've been doing that the last 5 or 6 weeks, and it's been great just having that ready to go Sunday morning for Fabs. You've had some great guests on lately. Collette, Carter, Torres. Hope I'm not leaving people out, but it's been a great run. So honored to join that crew and talk fab with you guys.
Hey, cool. Thanks, Ryan. Like I said, Kevin, we're only going to bring people on the show that are willing to plug us on air. So that, I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been a good run.
I will say that the double stroller with me with the headphones, the double stroller, and I've got two dogs. I'm pushing the whole crew through my neighborhood Sunday mornings. It's a sight to behold, but it works. It works.
That's a pretty typical sight for me in the neighborhood. Usually if it's not too hot, it's like midday. If my youngest wants to take a nap on the road, that's what my regular midday routine is like. So I like the routine. All right, we're going to get right into our news and notes then. We got a lot to talk about here, a lot going on this past week, especially when it comes to possibly affecting our fab considerations, as we tend to do our news and notes that we go over. We really focus on that. I'm not going to touch on most any COVID IL since, as usually those players come back pretty quickly and they don't really affect your ad drops. So let's get right into it, Kevin. Welcome back. You'll start with the first one. In New York, Tyler McGill, he left Thursday's game with right shoulder discomfort. And lo and behold, he's going to be shut down from throwing altogether for the next 4 weeks as he heads to the IL. Mets fans are still longing for the day that their all-star rotation is fully intact, which we have not quite seen yet this year. You might be waiting until the very end of the year, September, at this rate, before we see any glimpses of that with these new injuries coming up. If we ever do, to be honest, you know, what impact on the Mets rotation does McGill's newest absent provide?
Well, I think it just cements a spot for David Peterson that a week ago this time, we weren't sure that he was still in the rotation. It looks like he's going to pitch on Monday at home against Miami, which is a great matchup. And then he has possibly, this is where it gets tricky. So Scherzer is going to throw another bullpen session on Tuesday, it appears. He says that's the only one he'll need. Some people have him penciled in to pitch next Sunday. If that's the case, that'll push David Peterson to the following week start against Houston. So he either gets Miami twice, or he gets Miami this week and then Houston. It looks like they have a bullpen day figured in this week. So David Peterson will be it that they need for starters. And so either way, I'm not even that worried about the Houston start, as crazy as that may sound. Miami, Monday, first of all, last in the league by over 50 points in OPS versus lefties at 591. That is amazing. That's an amazing matchup. It'd be great if he gets them twice, but even not, Houston's mid-pack. As good as Houston's lineup could be, they're 15th in the league. So not too worried if Scherzer does come back next weekend and we don't see Peterson again until he gets to face Houston, but it really just cements his spot.
Yeah, since we talked a little bit about him last week, he said, or the week before even, not sure exactly what was going on, especially with, you know, Miguel coming back from his previous injury. And now that he's back on and not coming back for at least probably about 2 months, with being shut down for 4 weeks and then having to ramp back up, if he can, even at that point, depending on the severity of the injury. All right, Ryan, we talked last week on the show about how it just seems like every other catcher in the league has been dropping like flies. The trend continues this week with Yadier Molina hitting the IL with knee soreness, as a catcher of his experience level will tend to do. Is there anybody in St. Louis that can replace Molina fantasy-wise at the catcher position, or should we be looking to fill the catcher slots outside of St. Louis?
Yeah, these guys are dropping like flies. I had a lot of Danny Jansen last week trying to fill that void. And yeah, it's been rough. Mitch Garver as well. But yeah, with Molina, I don't really think there's much fantasy value in either replacement. So it looks like Andrew Knizner is going to be the primary catcher. He at least started Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. But there's not really much here, right? There's a 23% K rate. He's hitting 192, hit 174. In 2021, with one homer and 185 plate appearances, has one homer this season, 118 plate appearances. You get the picture. The underlying skills really aren't there either. So they support what we're talking about here. So Knizner, even though he's the primary guy, I'm looking elsewhere, and I've got a couple kind of catcher names that I think will pop up throughout the length of the show that I think are a lot more interesting to me. There is also St. Louis recalled Ivan Herrera from AAA, who actually at AAA hit 291 with three homers and 129 plate appearances with good plate skills. The biggest thing with catcher transitions to the majors, it's just so hard to make that shift and learn a new rotation and learn the game. I wouldn't expect much out of Ivan Herrera. And even still, he's not the primary guy. No, I would look far away, run away, do whatever you need to do to avoid St. Louis catching while Molina's out.
You just look how, of all people, Adley Rutschman has adjusted to the majors and how slow that process can be for a catcher who's going to catch. MJ Melendez is hitting the ground running and he looks pretty good, but he's not focusing on catching. Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, he split his time between DH, right field, and catcher. So he's really just focused on hitting, or somebody like Rutschman making that adjustment while also, as you said, Ryan, having to focus on the rotation and learn those pitchers and move forward in that realm. But yeah, I think that's a good call out there as far as just like being aware of like those statistics at AAA for a catcher don't always translate, especially quickly, and especially for somebody who's not exactly a top tier talent, at least on expectation wise. All right, Kevin, after not being available, maybe possibly being available, to not being available, that Tony Russo was all over the place in the last couple of days with Liam Hendricks, he finally sends him to the IL, and the White Sox are without their closer, at least their main closer. Tony La Russa said he expects Hendricks to miss about 3 weeks. So how interested are you in Kendall Graveman due to the length of time expected to be missed by the White Sox main closer?
I'm pretty interested in leagues where I could use the help at closer. I'm not sold on the fact this is only going to be 3 weeks, especially with it getting close to the All-Star break, where a couple more weeks actually buys you 3 more weeks. Graveman has been great. Even with a 2.51 ERA, it could be much better. He's only given up more than one earned run in one appearance this season. That ballooned it to a whole 2.51 there. Best part about this, even if it is only 2 more weeks, the White Sox have 13 games. But if it is indeed longer, if this does take to the All-Star break, like I expect that it very well could, the White Sox have a 7-game week, a 6-game week, another 7-game week, and an 8-game week leading into the All-Star break. They have 28 games in the next 28 days of the 4 scoring periods leading up to the break. So I'm pretty interested and hoping that people I'm competing against in bids tonight are expecting Hendricks back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, this is why you always say you pay up for closers. But of course, the guy everybody paid up for is the one going on the shelf. So he's not immune.
And that has a lot to do with it for me. Yeah. I have a lot of Hendricks.
That wasn't directed at you, I promise, but it was. But we'll keep with the closer category here. We'll just get that category out of the way in the news and notes section, I think. So, Ryan, I'm going to go to Philly with you. And the obvious news that came out of there in their bullpen is that Corey Knebel was removed from the capital C closer role and probably gets put into the back of a committee, another C. Everybody loves hearing that, but assuming he's not going to get another chance for a little while, is it worth speculating on the multiple options Philadelphia has available at the back end of their rotation? And if you had to choose just one, which way would you be leaning?
Yeah, it's definitely worth speculating on. Just as a general theme this year, at least the way I've seen it, and definitely in 15 teamers, is there really hasn't been like much fab opportunities for closers so much lately. So to what Kevin was saying with Graveman, like I echo everything that he just said. I'm very interested in Kendall Graveman with that going on. Phillies, man, it's a mess. And just tonight, just Saturday night, like we got an additional read as to what's going on. So it's definitely either Brad Hand or Sir Anthony Dominguez. And you said the curse word, the C word, committee, Adam. That's what it sounds like it's going to be. Both Dominguez and Hand have sub-2 ERAs. But that's where the differences between these two end. Like the skills, it's not even close, in my opinion, who the better pitcher is. Like Sir Anthony Dominguez is by far more talented than Brad Hand is, even on despite that closer experience and all that narrative type stuff. Like every single skill you look at, Sir Anthony Dominguez, just he's doubling Brad Hand in swinging strike rate, 16% to 8%, more than doubling in K minus walk rate, 28% to 12%. I could go on and on. Basically, any type of underlying metric that you look at would prefer Dominguez, except for usage. Brad Hand did get a save this week. I know Dominguez pitched the 9th earlier this week and got a kind of a vulture win. And then on Saturday, Nola went 8 innings. This was pretty much a straight read on what the bullpen options are. Aaron Nola went 8 shutout innings. It was a 1-0 game. Philadelphia scored their run, I think, in the 6th or 7th inning. And it was Brad Hand. And it was Brad Hand against the heart of the Nationals order. It was Brad Hand against Juan Soto, Nelson Cruz, and Josh Bell. So, like, the thought that Dominguez is just in there for the highest leverage heart of the order guys, that was not the case this evening. Brad Hand, of course, blew the save. Sir Anthony Dominguez came in the 10th and got the save. Brad Hand got the win, which is hashtag kill the win. But that's just so interesting to me in what was just a very obvious cut and dry save situation against the best that Washington had to offer. And really only one lefty in Soto. I know Josh Bell's a switch hitter, I believe, and Cruz is handed. It was Brad Hand. So we'll see if that changes, but after tonight. But Hand did just give up that one run. It looks to me like it's going to be Brad Hand more often than it's going to be Sir Anthony Dominguez. That being said, I'm not putting much fab coin on Brad Hand. I just don't think the skills are not there. You tack on the blown save tonight. I think Dominguez is by far the better option. However, in deeper leagues, Dominguez is probably already taken and Brad Hand might still be available. So in that case, if you're really desperate for saves, maybe you throw a couple bucks on Brad Hand just to maybe eke out a save or two in the next week or so. But long term, I think this is going to be Sir Anthony Dominguez's job to lose.
Yeah, I like the take as far as long term goes. I'd be all about grabbing Hand for the next week and a half, 2 weeks. I am on that same train where I think that's just where it stops. I think he finds his way out of that role, even if he gets the lion's share of it. He's proven in his last couple stops, that's just who he is and how he's going to work ever since his days in Cleveland. Those days are long gone, where he was really overworked is his days in Cleveland. So that might just be have caught up to him in the last season or two. All right, let's get out of the bullpen. And unfortunately, let's talk about another injury. Kevin, earlier in the week, Ozzie Albies was put on the IL, and he was going to be out for a while with the fractured foot. Orlando Arcia looks to be the replacement at second base for Atlanta. How popular do you see him being this Sunday night with dual eligibility coming soon, as he already has the outfield eligibility and should be getting second base and middle infield soon in the NFBC formats? Already probably has second base eligibility in some other formats like Yahoo and what have you. And would you be buying in if you need the help at either of those positions?
Yeah, I like Arcia if I need some help here. The interesting thing is that we talked about this a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of players that have second base eligibility. So that may keep the price down a little bit tonight. And his numbers have never been overwhelming. And he's not going to hit 367 like he is currently. But that's fueled by a 432 BABIP. But all the projections have him hitting between 250 and 260 rest of season, and they've been adjusted, giving him well over 200 plate appearances. We hope to get Albies back in September. So for the next 2.5 months, close to double-digit home runs, a couple of stolen bases thrown in, close to 30 runs, close to 30 RBI, with that batting average that's well above league average that we've seen thus far this season, I'm interested. And it's people have soured on him, so the price might not be too outrageous here tonight.
Yeah, I have plenty of exposure to Ozzie Albies of all players, mostly, of course, in draft and holds and draft champions and stuff like that. And that was when I was drafting him, when he, according to roster recess, he was the starting first baseman for Atlanta, obviously before the Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman debacle all cleared up. Luckily, I have him as an option now moving forward for that, as he obviously wasn't going. He was like round 45 or beyond pick. I did not take any stock into him actually being the start. I just want to clear the air there. I did not think he was actually going to be the first baseman for Atlanta, but lo and behold, he is starting in the infield for them and could be valuable. All right, let's go stay in the infield, Ryan, and go over to the West Coast. And Anthony Rendon, sadly, is out for the rest of the season. Can't catch a break except if it's part of his body. And he's got surgery on his wrist. Can we see anything worthwhile out of production from Rendon's replacements in Anaheim?
No, I think I drew the short end of the straw on this one compared to Kevin with Arcia, which, by the way, I really do like Arcia, especially if people have, if folks out there have fab decisions to make this weekend of Arcia versus anyone on the Angels replacements for Rendon. It's not even close for me. It looks like it's going to be Matt Duffy, who was I still remember this on opening day, was the leadoff hitter in Anaheim. Matt Duffy has 2 barrels in 116 plate appearances, which is not very fantastic. No homers, 6 runs, 5 RBI. There's nothing there. Jack Mayfield is another guy. Like, I actually have rostered Jack Mayfield before, but it was in AL Tout Wars, which is 12 team AL only. And you're just trying to roster anybody with a pulse. In any kind of normal sized league, I'm staying away from Mayfield, from Duffy. There's some Luis Rengifo who's been playing second base every day, staying away from that, as well as Andrew Velasquez. It's a mess, and this has been the story the last few years in Anaheim. It's a non-Trout, non-Otani, non-Rendon when he's healthy mess for that lineup. And yeah, just stinks for Rendon, and for him, for his fantasy owners, as 2 years in a row now of pretty much lost seasons. Tough news. I don't think you're looking there at all for any kind of fantasy relevant replacement, though.
All right. Hopefully the next news item I give you, Ryan, is a little bit better. And I don't want to give you any short straws.
It will be. I can tell.
All right, good. All right, Kevin, in the meantime, we'll go back to you in Minnesota, as we tend to do. Somehow we find a way to talk about Minnesota's lineup in the show most episodes. This time, Jorge Polanco is the one going to the IL with back tightness. Corresponding move brought Alex Kirilloff back to Minnesota. And as nice it would be if we could just say, if you lost Polanco, pick up Kirilloff. It doesn't really work that way in most situations. So tell me, like, who's going to get the playing time in Minnesota due to Polanco's absence? Somebody that we might be able to consider to fill his shoes.
I think it actually is Kirilloff. It works out. We've seen Miranda at first base tonight. Kirilloff is at first base. Last night, Kirilloff was in the lineup as well with Miranda at first base. He was designated hitter. Gary Sanchez was catching tonight. They got Jeffers catching and Sanchez is the DH. They still got Kirilloff in there. I really think that first base outfield capability, not just eligibility for us, but capability for him, is really going to help out here. We could see him in the outfield. We could see him at first base. We could see him at designated hitter. And I really think that's the thing. And for those that didn't notice, he was raking in the minors before he came back here a couple of days ago, which the best part about that is not the numbers. It's that it appears that wrist is healthy. And so if that's the case, they're going to get Kirilloff in the lineup as much as they can.
Yeah, the more consecutive games that you can see Kirilloff in a lineup at any level is a good thing, without having to need a day of rest. And just get every day that Kirilloff sits, you're just going to be scared that something went wrong. I'm just telling you right now. And so the more often he plays, the better you're going to feel, for sure. All right, Ryan, let's get a little bit better with this one. We'll go very positive. No injury, no sitting, no loss of time. But we have a promotion. Finally, the Tigers have purchased the contract of Riley Green, outfielder, and has promoted him to Detroit on Saturday. It's expected that Green may break opening day roster along with Spencer Torkelson, if not for, of course, his injury sustained during spring training. What do you think we can expect from the young outfielder for the remainder of this season? And to go back to what we asked Kevin, would you rather have Riley Green or Alex Kirilloff rest of 2022?
Yeah, I'll start with your last question before I forget it. Kirilloff or Green rest of season? I would lean Green just because of the speed factor. And I know they've both been injured, but Kirilloff's lengthy injury past just scares me long term for this year, despite all the reasons that Kevin kind of laid out. Like, I like Kirilloff, but I'm going to lean Green just because of the ceiling and the speed, which has been few or far between on Fab this year, except for John Birdie. But yeah, it's Green for me at HQ. So we've got a whole minor league crew that does prospecting all with just a fantasy baseball lens as opposed to real life baseball or whatever. And then Green was our number 5 overall prospect coming into this season. We have Riley Green projected for 8 homers, for 7 steals, and a .265 batting average over 280 at bats the rest of the season. If that hits, that's huge. That's huge, especially in deeper leagues. And Green already, even today, I know this doesn't really mean anything like in the long term, but he's already off the schneid. You hear so many times of prospects who get all excited. They come up to the show and they just struggle immediately. Green went 2 for 3 with 2 walks. So he was on base in 4 out of his 5 plate appearances today. I didn't get to watch it, but that's a pretty good box score. No strikeouts, obviously, in the one time that he got out. He didn't K. He didn't attempt a stolen base, but already you're seeing what the prospect folks are seeing with Riley Green. He's going to be quite expensive this weekend in leagues where he's available. But at this point in the season, like, how many more opportunities are you going to have to be able to bid on somebody of a player this caliber? So I think Green is worth opening up the wallet for if he is available. And yeah, this is a lot more fun to talk about than Andrew Knisner or Jack Mayfield or Matt Duffy. I'm really excited to see what Riley Green does the rest of the season. It's the package looks complete, and we saw a glimpse of that today.
Yeah, if Pittsburgh can ever get it together and bring O'Neill Cruz back, he might be the last player worth saving the hammer for. But Green is here, and he's, as you mentioned, he's at least in his first game not struggling. It's those 2 walks that really caught my eye as well when you mentioned that. Rather, 2 hits is great to have 5 plate appearances and to get on base 4 out of those 5 times with half of them being walks just shows that he was cool, calm, and collective during his major league debut. And you can't say that 9 times out of 10 when somebody's making their debut. especially with somebody such a high level of expectations that people have for Green. All right, Kevin, back to some bad news, though it might not be as bad as it looks on the surface. Jeremy Peña was sent to the IL earlier in the week as he takes some time off and gives his competitors an opportunity to catch him in AL Rookie of the Year voting, probably. And he's nursing his left thumb for at least 10 days. Aldemus Diaz seems to be taking his place. Do you see him as a valid internal option to replace him in the short term, or are you looking outside of the Houston organization to fill Peña's shoes, again, even if he's just on the shelf for the minimum of 10 days, which will be this whole week coming up?
Yeah, it really does look like he'll be back next weekend. He's already taken grounders, and with a thumb injury, that's great to see. So I don't expect this to be long-term at all. Houston has an off day on Monday. So in NFBC formats, we're looking at a three-game week the first half of the week, and then possibly less than that for the weekend if he does make it back. So if Peña makes it back. So I don't see a lot of need for Aledmus Diaz. Yeah, I'm looking elsewhere, hopefully. If you really need him for the first half of the week in the Houston lineup, he's fine. Sometimes he runs into one. We know you can get a couple runs, a couple RBI, just anybody in that Houston lineup, as we've been talking for the last year and a half. But yeah, I'm probably looking elsewhere. Hopefully you have another mid infielder option. Like I keep saying, so many guys qualify at second base. So hopefully you have somebody that qualifies at middle infield and you don't even have to worry about this.
Yeah, more than likely, Peña was your middle infielder, even as well as he's been doing this season. You didn't draft him as your starting shortstop in most scenarios. I'm sure there's people out there that did, but in most scenarios, you're probably not filling your starting shortstop position with Peña, so you have a little bit more flexibility in your FAB options. All right, Ryan, back in Chicago, the flamethrower Frank Schwindel heads to the IL, obviously still hurting from that 35-mile-per-hour pitch he threw earlier in the week for the Cubs. And after being sent down for all that one day, Schwindel, who I don't believe he actually even made it to Iowa. I think he just got called back like right away. He's been pretty good, man. He's been pretty good overall, productive, at least on a fantasy roster stat sheet. Do you see any obvious beneficiaries in Chicago as Schwindel nurses his sore back on the IL?
So first off, yeah, I'm not gonna make fun of anyone for blowing out their back throwing 35, because that might be me here in a few years. So, you know, no harm, no foul. But no, the direct replacement looks like it's going to be Alfonso Rivas, who has really not done anything with his audition so far this year, hitting 194 with two homers in 108 plate appearances, 3% barrel rate. There's just not much there. It's going to be like musical chairs, I think, in Chicago for now, where I can see Patrick Wisdom filling in at first base, where he can where he has at least played before. But then that opens up some outfield and third base time. There's just a revolving kind of door that only gets even more revolving with other injuries that they've had. I know Nick Madrigal is out for quite a while, and he was their everyday second baseman. Infield's kind of a mess right now for Chicago. I know we're gonna probably talk about him a little bit later, but I think indirectly the biggest beneficiary of this move is Jonathan Villar, who I just think gets more and more playing time and can produce at a scarce category. But if you're looking strictly for like first base replacements, Rivas is not your guy. Wisdom's already rostered. So yeah, you're not really looking, and you're just hoping that that the Schwindel thing is just minor. He gets back shortly after the minimum and does not throw any more 35-mile-an-hour heaters from here on out, because apparently it didn't do well.
That's a thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole positional players pitching more often. It seems as though often this year than any year in recent history.
It does. And I mentioned this before. I feel like it's like that joke that was funny the first time, and then that keeps getting said and said. Like, it was quirky when position players started.
It was great when it was Brett Phillips.
Right. Yeah, and there was like
only
a thing,
when it's Brett Phillips,
and only when it's Brett Phillips, and not like Albert Pujols. I don't know. That could be a whole other rant for another day.
I kind of like annoying. The Albert Pujols thing, because at least you can say he played every single position except for center field, I believe. So if it's somebody that's with true. A career like Pujols, fine, let him get in that in his walk year and get that under his belt. But as a regular thing. No, we can move on. Speaking of moving on, we will keep going with the news. We only have two little pieces left, and they're basically the same type of news. Kevin, I'll start with you in Cleveland. Framil Reyes is expected to return to the Guardians lineup on Tuesday. Who do you see getting the bump out of playing time to make room for Reyes' bat?
I don't think it will be, but I still think it's worth mentioning. Hopefully it's not Oscar Gonzalez. While he doesn't have a home run yet, a third of his hits have been doubles, and he's looked great, and hopefully it's not. I do not think it will be. I think it's going to be the first base. I think Reyes is going to be the DH most days. Naylor's been filling that spot. Owen Miller's been filling that spot. They've been playing first base other days. We also got a lot of platooning going on in Cleveland with Clement, Mercado, and even Andrés Giménez and Stephen Kwan. So I think all of them lose a little bit, hopefully not too much for Naylor, who has slowed down a little bit after his hot start when he first came back from injury, but to be able to see him work through it. I think mostly it's going to be even Richie Palacios has been getting a little bit of playing time. I think those guys are all going to diminish a little bit. We'll see Reyes in there and at DH and Naylor and sometimes Owen Miller at first base.
Yeah, it's too bad for as somebody who has plenty of exposure to Naylor. I wouldn't like to see him sitting more often. He played 11 straight games. He did sit today on Saturday, his first set, like I said, in the last 12 days. And so I do not want to see him moving into a part-time role. Sorry, Owen Wilson backers. That would be my bet there, but we'll see how it turns out next week. And Ryan, in Chicago, Tim Anderson is expected back for the White Sox on Monday. So same question, who's getting time cut down with Anderson back in his everyday role at short?
Yep, thank goodness as a Tim Anderson manager on several teams. I love Tim Anderson. I love Tim Anderson, the player, the fantasy player for sure. Danny Mendick loses playing time. He was the backup shortstop hitting ninth every day for Chicago. Like, I don't think too many listeners have rostered Danny Mendick on their teams. And if you have, you are free from that semi-torture. Yep, ready to rock and roll with Tim Anderson. It's actually interesting. I am really interested to see with Anderson how much he's going to run when he comes back, just because it was a groin injury. And we saw a little bit last year, like he missed some time with it was weird, just like general leg fatigue and hamstrings. And Anderson did not really run that much in the second half of last season. So that's something I have my eye on. Like, it's not anything obviously preventing me from throwing Anderson right back in, but that's definitely something I'm going to be looking at, is how often Anderson runs coming off that groin injury. But everything else with Tim Anderson looks great. The White Sox absolutely need him back at the top of that lineup. So yeah, throw Anderson in there and try and forget about Danny Mendick.
Yeah, there we go. All right. On that note, that's going to wrap up our news and notes section for this episode. As always, I'm sure we missed a few things worth noting. To keep up with all the news of the day, make sure you're listening to the First Pitch podcast with Chad Young, Scott Chu, and now Daniel Port joining the mix, which breaks down the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. In just a moment, we're going to talk to Ryan about everybody's favorite time of year down in Arizona. But before we do that, we're going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we are back. Of course, you were listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe. I'm joined, of course, by Kevin Hastings and our special guest today, Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ. And it would not be a good show to talk with somebody from Baseball HQ, Ryan, if I didn't ask you about First Pitch Arizona. And I saw you reply, and I don't remember who it was, but I saw you reply to a tweet, I think it was like 2 weeks ago or so, about First Pitch and what the dates were, where it was and all that. And the fact that that was already set, I thought was amazing. And I think that it's just worth talking about a little bit further. So first and foremost, I have a hard time believing anybody listening doesn't know what First Pitch Arizona is, or even First Pitch Florida is by now. But can you give a very brief synopsis of what exactly it is and why they should care, whether they're working in the industry like we are or not? They're just listening and they're just a fantasy baseball fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the platform for doing so. I'm not going to try and not get too sales pitchy or whatever. Obviously, I write for HQ.
We are not charging for this. I'm just wondering.
This is not a paid. I'll keep it to info only. And I know Kevin has been before, so he can chime in as needed. But if folks have not heard of First Pitch Arizona, basically what it is, it's a 3 to 4 day basically fantasy baseball fest in Phoenix in November. The last couple of years it's been October, but this year it's going to be November 3rd through 6th. So we just came out with those dates, like you said, Adam, a couple of weeks ago, and registration is going to be opening up here probably in about a week or so. We're trying to get all that open by the 1st of July. We'll obviously hear about that when that is all live. But yeah, it's 3 to 4 days of panels and a combination of panels and sessions where we try and do it. We start at Thursday night with a kind of a welcome reception or whatever at one of the Arizona Fall League ballparks, which I'll talk about in just a minute. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday is pretty much maybe half day, 2/3 of the day, panels, sessions, live drafts for attendees featuring honestly who's who of industry writers and podcasters and all that sort of thing. But then the really cool part that I like about it is it's during the Arizona Fall League. So like when we're not in panels and sessions or whatever, there's Arizona Fall League going on all within, there's I think like 5 or 6 ballparks within an hour of where we're at. And so we encourage you to go to the sessions, but if you want to go out there and maybe skip one and catch an extra game or whatever, there's Arizona Fall League action going on as well. And so we typically build into our agenda a conference game where you get, as part of your registration, you get tickets to that game and everyone goes to those games. And then we talk about, a lot of the panelists are scouts, like scouts for actual major league teams, that we'll go out and we'll come back and talk about what we saw out on the field. That's a big kind of part of the daytime program. The part that I really love about it is the nighttime part of the program and just hanging out with everybody that you either interact with on Twitter throughout the year or listen to their podcasts or whatever. You get 3 or 4 days of really laid back, good weather. You're hanging out outside at night, just talking baseball with people that you interact with online throughout the year. And one of the things, Adam, that you mentioned is like from the attendee standpoint is, at least in my opinion, I've made a lot of friends going to First Pitch. I've been going for 10 years now. A lot of friends through that conference that are not even writers or analysts or whatever. If you're not it's not a clicky thing. Everyone's very open. You can go up and pick brains. And we do that informally, but we also have like roster analysis sessions where we have industry folks can sit down with your roster and look at your keepers and all that stuff. But you have plenty of opportunity to sit back and talk with really whoever you want. Really the last few years, obviously COVID wrecked things just like everything else. But pre-COVID, we probably had, I don't know, maybe like if I had to ballpark it, 150 total attendees. And out of that 150, probably a third was like industry folks. Mm-hmm. So you have access to a lot of really smart people and they're all willing to talk. And it's just it's a great time. Like it's a very full, honestly, it's like a very tiring, like it's 4 days of pretty much nonstop fun, live podcasts. There's live drafts. Kevin, you were in a live salary cap draft that Jeff Erickson was running. If I just name drop folks, like Jeff volunteered his time to run that salary cap draft. And I was tracking the rosters and I'm running the commissioner tool on Fantrax, and Kevin was in there. My dad was in there. He's been going with me for 10 years. My brother was in there. So there's other Bloomfields you can meet. What's not to like about it? But that's a general like overview of what it is. But yeah, I don't want to push. You'll hear about it on every other podcast for probably the next few months leading up to it, if you're not sick of it already. But everyone I've talked to has tried to come back and just really enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to make a trip out there, if not this year, as soon as humanly possible as well.
Especially little kids, it's hard, I get it.
I know you said that you organized it around the Arizona Fall League. And I know in the past, you'd scheduled it almost every year around the All-Star game, the Fall Star game. Is that going to be, and I know that wasn't the case last year as they moved the schedule around for the Arizona Fall League. Do you know if that's going to be the case this year?
We got lucky. We got lucky this year. So yeah, last year the schedule like didn't really, it was fine. Cause like I said, everything in Phoenix is less than an hour. Some, a lot of parks are like 15, right. 20 minutes. So whatever. But this year our host hotel is, it's called Wrigleyville West. It's a whole kind of compound of the Chicago Cubs, obviously, of their spring training facility. They have a hotel. So that's where the conference is going to be. But this year, the Fall League is doing not only the Fall Stars game, which is Saturday night across the street. That's all at that same facility that the conference is at. So the Fall Stars game is Saturday night. They're also doing, this is, I think, brand new for this year, but the Fall League is doing a home run derby Friday night. Ooh. So like, again, across the street from where we're at. So I can just imagine now there are going to be little off the side DFS home run derby wagering and among attendees. That will absolutely happen. I know Paul Sporer in the past has run DFS competition for the Fall Stars game. I'm sure he'll do that again. But I think that's going to ramp up even more with the home run derby on Friday night. Like, we got really lucky. And again, both of those things are basically at our hotel. You're just walking across the street and checking that out. So I cannot wait for that. And the Fall League, is really, it's really an under the radar gem. There are maybe 200 people that go to these Fall League games, but like the quality of prospects that are on these Arizona Fall League teams is just crazy. Everyone talks about like the Albert Pujols example way back, but even as recently as five, six years ago, Ronald Acuna and Acuna and Robles were on this in the same outfield about 5 years ago. And then a couple years before that, it was Trout and Harper. Like, those type of caliber prospects play in these AFL games and go to the Fall Stars game. So it's just really cool to be able to sit in panels and sessions and talk to folks and then go to the ballpark and see like legitimate prospects from like the first or second row of the stadium.
In recent memory, I just keep always remembering hearing people talk about Pete Alonso hitting the 100 and whatever mile per hour fastball off Nate Pearson. And you couldn't, you couldn't not hear about that. And so these are like, to echo what you're saying, these are the type of players that you get to see before they make their debut. And a lot of people say that it's the finishing school, right? The Arizona Fall League is like the finishing school for these top prospects. If they're going to the they're going to the Arizona Fall League, there's a strong possibility, unless they're super young, that they're going to make their debut the following year So if not, break the opening day roster. Players to keep an eye out for. Kevin, I'm going to give you opportunity. I know you've talked about how much you like going to FPAS in the past, but if you had to pick just one aspect of your experiences that you would want to make sure, like, everybody who does have a chance to go just one time, what's the thing that they need to do if they only have one chance to go?
It's just the hanging out and meeting everybody, like Ryan talked about. You meet them at the games, you meet them in the evening after and in between the different forums and things. Like Ryan said, he's ran the auction that I've been in the last two. First pitch, 2019 was my first, and then this past year, I feel like I know Ryan. I feel like I know Ryan's dad, Roger. We've been in the same auction twice, and we've hung out, we've talked to each other, and had a great time. That's what it's all about. Other things going on. There's been postseason games going on both of the years I've got to go. This year, due to the delay of the season, the World Series is going to be going on during First Pitch Arizona. We're going to be hanging out watching World Series games as well with all the people you hear and talk about and meet. And it's just, words can't explain it. It's so much fun.
All right. Hopefully we'll all be able to see each other in Arizona, if, like I said, as soon as humanly possible. Ryan, let you finish it off here. Just let everybody know, do you have dates for the event set, but can people register? What do they need to do to prep to go?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, registration. Actually, before I pivot that, I just pulled up, Kevin, I had to pull up the standings for that auction league and see what's going on. You are in, looks like you're teetering between third and fourth. So you're in contention there. Pops is down at 11th. So dad's got to work on some of that stuff. I'll call him
Lucas
up.
Lucas Berry's been running away with it. And, so.
What's that?
Lucas Berry's been running away with it.
Lucas Berry, he's got 94. He's 20 points in in the lead. Nice. Shout out, Lucas. Yeah, that's a pretty dominant squad. But yeah, running or helping to run that auction every year is a blast. Like I said, we play it out and these guys know each other over the years. So anyway, a few logistical things. Like I said, the registration, so we just, at this point, it's a save the date because I know, especially for a lot of folks that don't live out on the West Coast or whatever, like this is something you need to plan for just in terms of time financially as well. So we do have the dates locked in. Again, it's November 3rd through November 6th. I'm probably going out there the 2nd for an extra day of golf. But officially it's November 3rd through the 6th at Wrigleyville West in Mesa, Arizona. And so registration, we're going to try and open it up around the 1st of July. You'll hear about that probably everywhere on Twitter and on baseballhq.com. We've got a little First Pitch Arizona like logo on the right side, where as we start to build out the program and that sort of thing, you can click that and get all that information. Typically in the past, so don't hold me to this, but typically we have an early bird rate right when we open up registration for the conference. That's around like $250. And that gets you access to all the conference stuff only. So access to all the panels, tickets to all the games that are part of the program, the AFL games, some lunches. You get a baseball forecaster, a minor league baseball analyst, all included in that stuff. I'm not going to make it sound like it's a cheap deal or anything like that. It is an investment. So that $250 is, again, just for the conference. There's hotel and flight and that sort of thing that you're on your own for. But I know a lot of people in the past have either stayed at the hotel and kind of roommated with some people, or some folks have even gotten Airbnbs. There was one like frat house last year, quote unquote, with like Michael Simeone and Mike Kurland, and there was a whole crew, Animal House style, that got an Airbnb near the hotel. So there's ways to do that. But yeah, typically around $250 for that. I'm not sure what it'll be this year, but just so you can get a ballpark, it'll be that plus flight and hotel. But again, if you're able to financially do it, if you're able to do it from a time standpoint and you enjoy fantasy baseball, it's really a can't miss, in my opinion and in the opinion of the industry as a whole. So.
Yeah,
I'm getting excited just talking about it, man. I'm ready for November.
Let's go.
Yeah.
It's one
thing.
Kevin,
are you thinking of going this year? Or I know it's a lie, but.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a definite.
Cool.
All right, now that ad break is over, we're going to move into our player recommendations regardless. Ryan, thanks so much, man, because it's like the fact that I saw you tweet about it. Oh, you already have dates for that. We need to probably talk about that. And as you said, it's going to be everywhere. I get that. But like, it's never too early to kind of plan for that. And as you said, between hotel flights and just life conditions happening, do what you need to do to make your accommodations so you can get out there. All right, let's move into those player recommendations. We do have Fab going on this Sunday night, so we do need to talk about some players that could be a consideration for the different categories. As we started talking about a few weeks ago, you really need to start looking at the categories in your leagues to make sure that you can be aware of where you can make inroads the easiest and where you need to hold on, where you have a lead. So, Kevin, we'll start with you, of course. We'll go category by category. We're talking power first, home runs, RBIs. Who might hit a couple bombs for us this week that's going to tack on to those categories?
I think this could be a good week for Nomar Mazara in San Diego. A couple weeks ago when he got called up, we talked about the platoon concerns, and that still is a concern, but not to the extent we thought it might be at the time. He is remaining in the game for a little while after left-handed relievers come in to face him. And it's only been 7 plate appearances, but he's got 4 hits against them. So that will continue to keep him in the game. They have a 7-game week this week. San Diego does, all games at home. 5 of the starters look to be right-handed starting pitchers. So at least 5 starts for him, probably exactly 5 starts for him this week. But he has been staying in the game as the game progresses and left-handed relievers come into the game. So that's good to see. Got his first home run this week. He's got a couple of doubles. Power starting to come around. And it could be a really good week for Nomar Mazara.
Like you said, I know we are worried about him being pulled early based on his splits. But if he's staying on for more than the 3 plate appearances, more opportunity, obviously, is going to be a good thing. Ryan, who is your option that you're looking at for some power help?
So I'll throw 2 out here, just repaying my debts for the ad read. I'll go 2-for-1 here. First off, this kind of ties back to what Kevin was saying earlier about Alex Kirilloff opening some playing time at first base and outfield and that sort of thing. I think that opens up even more time for Trevor Larnach. I think originally, like the return of Kirilov, you might think, oh, Larnach's playing time is going to get slashed a little bit. I don't think that's the case. And Larnach, from a pure homer and RBI standpoint, that the Twins are matching Larnach, 12.5% barrel rate. Like the hard hit stuff is all there. K rate's a little bit high, but he makes such hard contact in that lineup that I think the RBIs are going to be there. I think the homers are going to be there. I think he's a pretty good add. And it looks like at least in NFBC, 12 teamers, he's about 30% rostered. So should be somewhat widely available. And then the other one I'll talk about, Jorge Alfaro. So I was mentioning Andrew Knizner earlier, a far better replacement if you had Yadier Molina, would be Jorge Alfaro if, again, available, but 30% rostered in 12 teamers in the NFBC in kind of your mid-sized league. Alfaro is available. Again, another high K rate, but has five homers and 122 plate appearances. He's the primary catcher for San Diego. Austin Nola, used to really like Austin Nola, but that's been a disaster lately. The power metrics for Alfaro all look really good to me as well. And again, catcher can be so bad that in two catcher leagues or even in deeper one catcher spots, if you need some power relative to the rest of that wasteland that is the catcher free agent market, I think Jorge Alfaro could run into a couple and get you some homers with some ribs.
Yeah, I liked Austin Nola too when he was playing other positions but still eligible at catcher. That's always nice to see. But
the Christian Bethencourt anymore of previous years. Yes. Yeah.
Bethencourt still, at least in Yahoo, he's still available at first base and catchers. Always nice to see those multiple positions come into play. All right, let's move on to our speed categories. Kevin, back to you. Who might steal? Now, nobody's going to expect these pickups to steal as many bases as John Birdie, but we can always dream. So who are you dreaming on to be the next John Birdie in this Fab run?
Well, Ezequiel Duran down in Texas, universally owned in 15 teamers, at least in NFBC main events, but available in over half of 12 teamers still. And it being the Texas Rangers, after he showed us some power in his first week, they turned him loose on the bases in his second full week in the league. Two stolen bases this week in three attempts. The great thing about that is the unsuccessful attempt was the first one, and they continued to let him go. What's pretty intriguing to me when you look back at his minor league numbers in 2021 at the same level, when in the Yankees organization, he was 12 for 19, went over to the Rangers organization and was 7 out of 9. Much better success rate. Maybe it's not just that the Rangers like the run. Maybe they're better at developing base stealers with this guy. He's got 97th percentile sprint speed. So it appears, showed him how to steal bases or develop the talent he does have to steal bases, and now they're turning him loose.
Yeah, he obviously has a green light, and in a short period of time up in Texas, he's got well above average. He's gotten more opportunities per plate appearance than your typical base runner does, and he has taken more than 13% of his opportunities to, as you mentioned, to attempt those stolen bases again in that short period of time. I don't put, especially this year with the pitch clock being in place in a few or most, I believe, AAA stadiums, I know that the stolen base numbers, at least totals, I take them with a grain of salt in AAA, especially after reading some stuff from Tucker Davidson saying how difficult it is to hold runners with the pitch clock on your mind as well. But the fact that he's able to translate that so quickly, and as you mentioned, after the first failed attempt, still being able to get the next two, it shows that, at least like you said, Texas has the faith in him and he has the ability. Good call out there. All right, Ryan, let's go back to your call out of earlier in the podcast and let everybody know who you like for some stolen bases or possibly even some runs as well.
Yeah. I alluded to this earlier, but Jonathan VR, 30% rostered in 12 teamers. And I think a lot of that kind of low rate is due to just like he doesn't have an everyday position. And certainly didn't, he was a utility guy entering the season and kind of flew under some radars because of that. But just injuries are mounting throughout Chicago's infield, as we already just talked about. And VR is a perfect 6 for 6 this season. He's pretty much playing every day because Chicago's running out of bodies. And he's going to probably hurt you. VR's only hitting 218 25% K rate is just okay. Low BABIP. So I actually think VR can probably hit 250. So I don't know if he's actually going to be a batting average drag like he has been, but you're getting him for stolen bases. I think the stolen bases are going to be there, especially with that success breeds more opportunities. And a perfect 6-for-6 on a team, Chicago, that down the stretch, I think they're just going to be playing out the string. Like, I think this is the time to snag VR. Again, not promising John Birdie type production, but VR is only, you think of him as like super old. He's 31. Like, he's not super old for a base stealer and has had game-changing stolen base seasons in the past. I'm not saying he's going to go back to 40 steals that he had in 2019 or obviously the 60 that he had back in 2016. But if you told me Jonathan VR ends the season with 25, 30 bags, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And that matters a lot, given the lack of alternatives for stolen bases on the wire.
Yeah, and VR's, what's funny about him is that, yeah, he's had those seasons where he's stolen a whole lot of bases, but he's never really been that fast. He's just really good at stealing bases, just good at his job. I mean, right now, 33% percentile in sprint speed. So not typically somebody you would hear talking about, hey, if you need stolen bases, go after a guy that's in the 33% percentile here. But VR, he's got a proven track record of, regardless of what his actual speed is recorded, he knows when to run, he knows who to run on, and knows what opportunities to take advantage of. Somebody you can trust regardless of that speed factor that you might read into it.
And that's a really good point too. Like, I think that'll help with the aging curve, because someone who just relies on elite raw speed, that's going to go away like in your early 30s. But someone like VR, who just has that knowledge and knows when to go, and like you said, who to run against and all that stuff, tends not to go away with age. So that's a really good point.
If anything, it gets better. If anything, you just learn more.
Older and wiser.
There you go. All right, let's get into some guys who might have a good opportunity ahead of themselves. Just before we do that, let's get some schedule notes out of the way. There are 10 teams that have a 7-game work week ahead of them. The Yankees, the White Sox, Atlanta, Miami, the Cubs, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, San Diego, and San Francisco all have 7 games. From what I could tell, there are no doubleheaders, which is new for a week. There's been a lot of doubleheaders in the last couple of weeks. No doubleheaders next week. There are only 2 teams that have 2 scheduled days off next week, Washington and Texas. And then, as I tend to do, focus on Colorado, as they seem to be going back and forth every week, not splitting their week between home and away. They're only home or only away. And that's no different next week. They'll be on the road for all 6 of their games, heading to Miami for 3, and then traveling back to Minnesota. So if you've got any of those Miami pitchers, you should consider making sure that you have them in your lineup, at least for the first 2 games of that series, as Colorado adjusts to not being in Coors. Kevin, with all that in mind and whatever else you want to consider, who looks like they might have a good opportunity ahead of themselves that maybe doesn't fit specifically in what power or speed categories, but as an overall opportunity, who you got?
It's not just for this week, although they do have a 7-game week ahead, but rest of the season, Tyrone Taylor is the center fielder in Milwaukee now. And unless they make a move, he is the center fielder for the rest of the season. If you prorate the BatX projections, who already give him 60 games played rest of season, it could be more like 90. We're looking at 15 home runs and 4 or 5 stolen bases with a .249 batting average rest of the year. Those kind of guys just are not on the waiver wire at this time of year typically. And he is available in over half of 12-team online championship leagues and, yeah, more than I thought in main event leagues, over 10%. Tyrone Taylor, Todd Zola tweeted it out today as well. This might be overlooked. He was already playing quite a bit, but now he is the guy, Tyrone Taylor in Milwaukee.
Yeah, of course, with Lorenzo Cain being DFA'd in Milwaukee, news that we didn't hit on earlier, but worth noting here, DFA'd on the day that he gained 10-year his 10-year mark with Major League Baseball. So, of course, that comes with its own bells and whistles as well. So, whether he...
And as a Royals fan, Lorenzo Cain, absolutely future Kansas City Royals Hall of Famer. His defense alone in 2014 and 2015 took him to 2 World Series. So,
I thought you were going to say future Kansas City Royal player. like he was going to be playing. And
don't rule it out.
There are scenarios that we could hope for as fans, just to get him and Salvi back together. Their best
Michael
of friends,
A. Taylor absolutely. And Lorenzo Cain in the outfield. That's there we go. That's what we can wish for. All right, Ryan, follow that. Who you got that might have a good opportunity ahead of themselves this coming week?
I'll go, yeah, this is schedule, mostly schedule opponent. So Pittsburgh gets those 7 games, 4 of them against the Cubs. And then the weekend series, they go to Tampa. So it gets a little tougher, especially if they get McClanahan next Sunday. But even still, volume matters when you're streaming weekly hitters. And I'm going to go Diego Castillo, who has been playing every day up the middle for Pittsburgh, hit his 4th home run today. And just seems to be getting hot at the right time. Again, this is probably more of a deep league play where you're just trying to get someone who has a little bit of pop and everyday playing time. And Castillo checks both of those boxes. The power metrics actually look really good for Diego Castillo, even though he's hitting right around 200, has already stolen a base. Like, he's gotten really unlucky with the BABIP. So I think Castillo is probably pretty widely available in any league. Shallow leagues, there probably are better options out there even for this week. But in 12 or 15 teamers, I think Diego Castillo absolutely works this week against decent matchups and some kind of skills that are at least trending in the right direction and playing every day. That's about all you can ask for in some of these deeper leagues.
All right, let's move away our hitters and let's fly through some of our pitcher options as we tend to do. Let's look a little further ahead. You guys got a list of pitchers in front of you that tentatively, and I always stress tentatively, could look like they will have 2 starts, not this week, but the following week. I believe that's the 27th-ish of June. And it's a pretty short list here. So, Ryan, I'm going to start with you here. Give me one of these pitchers that you'd be in on to pick up in Fab this week to stash for their 2-start week. And then give me a guy on here that you think the crowd would be into that you're probably fading.
Yeah, great segment and great to think about this, by the way, too, because I know it gets talked about a little bit, but looking ahead to that second week is super important. I'm going to go George Kirby, who has really held his own in his first go around against major league hitters and gets just a dream schedule. He gets at Oakland this week and then two home starts for that 2-step next week against Baltimore and then Oakland again. Like, you cannot really ask for much better than that. Someone who I'm fading, I don't know if the market's on Reed Detmers. I'm certainly not on Reed Detmers. I know he had the no hitter, but no offense to Reed Detmers, that was one of the weaker no hitters I've ever seen with like just 2 strikeouts. Super happy for him, his family, all that stuff, but I'm not really a believer in Reed Detmers. Gets Kansas City, the White Sox, and then Houston, so that 2-step next week's kind of rough as well. So Reed Detmers is someone who I would shy away from despite the volume and starts here these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and once again, I'll clarify, I love that you went with George Kirby, big Kirby fan myself. I know that in a good chunk of NFBC leagues, he's probably not available as he went for quite a bit of chunk of change in the Fab that he became available. All the pitchers that are on this list are rostered in less than 50% of Yahoo leagues at this very moment, where streaming is a little bit more readily available. So keep that in mind as we are going through this. Kevin, same question though. Who do you like and who would you be fading that you think others might be on board?
I'm going with the Royal here, Jonathan Heasley. Been pretty good in his last 4 starts, although a little short in the last one, but he gets Texas at Kauffman and then at Detroit. And that's going to be a common theme throughout the pitching matchups as we finish up the show here, that Detroit has just been horrendous in spite of what they've done on Saturday and maybe even Friday night, but they put up some runs the last couple of days. They've been horrible all season long. And so I like Heasley here. I like Rich Hill this coming week, getting the start with Detroit, but even with the Cubs in there the following week as part of his 2-step, I do not like him for the following week in the 2 starts at Toronto, at Chicago. Especially this time of year, we never know pretty much until game day what the wind's doing in Chicago at Wrigley.
Yeah, whether or not they're going to have the roof open or closed in Toronto as well. And Toronto seems to be turning it on the way that people thought they would from the get-go. So not an offense that I really want to be facing. All right, let's go a little bit closer to home for this coming week. Kevin, who do you like for wins and Ks in those counting categories for your pitchers?
Yeah, it really depends on the leagues here. I like the two starts that Tyler Wells has for Baltimore this week, especially the Washington matchup. White Sox have been up and down. That'll be his second matchup for the weekend. He is widely available in 12-teamers and less, and available in over 20% of 15-team main event leagues. In shallow leagues, a shout out for John Gray, who it absolutely should have been used in that start against Detroit on Friday. But even with that, I know Yahoo leagues are up and down. There's a lot of daily pickups. So this may have went down today to the 41% he is rostered in Yahoo. But his upcoming schedule is the Nationals, at the Royals, at Baltimore, Oakland, and Seattle to finish up, is what it appears he'll get coming into the All-Star break. So he's someone, if I did pick him up for a spot start yesterday in Yahoo, I would probably hold on to. And then watch what Luke Weaver does tonight. As we're recording, that game just started. He got three innings in his first game back from injury. Nice outing with four strikeouts, one earned run. Let's see what he does tonight. He gets Detroit next week. So if it appears like he might be able to make it five innings after what he does tonight in his next start, then he's an obvious pickup for me this week.
All right, awesome. Great names to consider there if you guys looking for those wins in case. Ryan, you got any backups to the guys that Kevin was mentioning, and go right into your ratios as well, your ratio plays as well?
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to keep riding that Detroit train. Kevin, you touched on, and I agree, like the following week, even though it's a two-step at Toronto, at Chicago, that's rough. But Richo this week, 16% rostered in 12 teamers against Detroit. Like that's what you want to, that's why you stream. And matchup of the century could be Detroit against that Frank Schwindel 35 mile an hour. No, hit heater. So Richo, I think, is a great bet to get a win this week. The K's, I don't know, but Richo, at least over his last, I think, four starts, has a 20-5 strikeout to walk ratio. Skills are looking pretty good there. Speaking of ratios, like this is more just speculative, but Matt Whistler is someone who, if you're in deep leagues and just want like a ratio stabilizer in that kind of seemingly endless cycle of Tampa relievers that are great, Whistler's one. Whistler actually pitched with Drew Rasmussen out on the IL. Whistler was a follower to Jalen Beeks this week, so pitched the third and fourth inning this week. But if that trend continues and maybe he gets into the fifth inning, pitches the fourth and fifth or whatever in a game or two, maybe qualifies for a win with those ratios. So Matt Whistler is someone who I'm looking at from a ratio aspect this week.
Nice. All right. And we're going to skip the saves category. So, Kevin, just stick with your ratios and then we'll get into our wild card. But any other pitchers out there, Kevin, that you're looking at to chip away at your ERA and your whip?
Yeah, this is a really deep league play, but Davis Martin for the White Sox, and we really got to pay attention to what happens the rest of the weekend. He could be sent down at any time. He's been used as a follower his last two times out and went over five innings plus in both of those outings and performed really well. Keep an eye what's going on. Their starting rotation seems to be getting healthy, but he would line up. He's been going every 5 days in this follower role the last couple times out. Lance Lynn is only two. This will only be his second start back, and that's the day Davis Martin lines up. So could get in there before the end of the fifth inning and snag another win.
Nice. All right. I think we hit on your Kendall Gravemans of the world and your St. Anthony Dominguez's and Brad Hand options for saves. Those are going to be the popular options on your Fabs. Bid accordingly for them as well. So let's finish this off, guys, with our wild card selection. Kevin, I'll let you start us off. Who, for any particular reason, again, is it our IL stashes? This is your prospects that might be available. Just any player that didn't fit into any of the categories we talked about. Who might you be looking at if you have the flexibility on your bench to make a stash?
At this point, I don't have that flexibility really anywhere. It's get to that point of the season where the stashes are gone. Riley Green's coming up. I dropped him in a couple of spots a few weeks back and I had to. And at this point, I don't have any more stashes. And I'm actually actively not looking because I don't want to be tempted. My roster spots are too valuable at this point.
All right, Ryan, we'll follow that then. Kevin's saying don't do it. What name do you have to stash on a wild card status?
It's the plan B. Like, you stash if you can, but a lot of times you can't. And yeah, in any kind of league, we're all dealing with injuries, but it's been absolutely brutal lately. So if you have the ability to stash, consider yourself Luck. I don't know. I keep talking about Detroit. So I was just bashing Detroit, their lineup at least. But I do think there could be a changing of the guard at closer sometime soon. Gregory Soto has just been really bad lately. He gave up 3 earned in a blown save and loss to Texas on June 16th. The control has never been there. I just think Soto was on a heater for a little bit and that gave him some leash. But I think Michael Fulmer, who has a 2.25 ERA, a whip under 1, Michael Fulmer would be the plan B, in my opinion, in Detroit if a change is made. And I could absolutely see that happen. And I alluded to this earlier on the pod, but there just hasn't been a whole lot of like sexy turnover for closers this season. And so you have to jump on these guys a week or two early. And I think Michael Fulmer falls into that category with Soto struggling so much. You're not going to get a whole lot of saves because it is the Tigers, but you will get some. And that matters because they're just so few and far between on a lot of splintered bullpens, the way that the major league trends are going right now.
All right. That's going to tie us up. I think, Ryan, thanks so much, man, for joining us. Could you take 2 more seconds to let everybody know where they can find you, what you do, and why you do it?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys. This was a blast. I feel like I'm absolutely ready for tomorrow now. You cut into some Father's Day time for Fab tomorrow. So that's greatly appreciated by the family by actively participating in the pod. But no, doing great things here. Like I said, I've been listening a lot lately, so keep that up. You can follow me at RyanBHQ. On Twitter, my written stuff is all at baseballhq.com. And then every Friday, the Bench with Bubba podcast, do a weekly look ahead and look and comb through some of my Bloom boards, which are also available on Twitter. Go into a little bit deeper dive on those as part of that podcast as well. So that's where you can find me. Thanks again, guys.
Nice. If you're not following Ryan by now, you're doing something wrong. So make sure you change that immediately. That's going to wrap it up for episode 64 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. We will be back every Sunday with a detailed Fab breakdown throughout the 2022 season. And of course, take a look out for Kevin's companion article over at pitcherlist.com. Comes out every Sunday afternoon as well. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. And of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. I'd like to once again thank our guest Ryan Bloomfield for joining us. Follow him at RyanBHQ. And with that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hasting, thanks for listening. And with that, we bid you goodbye.